Blog Talk Radio.
Bonjour, mes amis. Ça va bien? Oh, I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. Darlings, it's Mummy, Sybil Brunson, and I'm coming to you tonight on our weekly podcast, live podcast here on the internet. Come now, don't sulk. And we, of course, are part of the wonderful Here Be Monsters Network, or Here Be Monsters Studio, I should say, on Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm here, and before I go into a weather alert, I'm just going to say I'm here with my wonderful producer and my muse and our head chemist, none other than Gwendolyn Holdenberry, who is also our sponsor. And she's the founder of DaughtersOfIsis.com. That's DaughtersOfIsis.com, all one word, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. They're our sponsors every week. And we're also brought to you by listeners just like you. Thank you. Gwendolyn, how are you tonight?
It's colder than a well digger's ass in the Klondike down here in the tropics. So I have a bone to pick with the North.
All right. Well, wait. I just have to say, now, part of creating a show like this, Gwendolyn and I, doing this show in a country as big as the United States, of course, is that we are folded or we're curved very neatly like a fresh pasta dough, like one of Lydia's wonderful pasta doughs. We're draped over the globe, and this involves not only many time zones, but it involves many climates. And then, of course, we have listeners right now, believe it or not, who are listening to us in Australia, South Africa, Germany, Europe, all over Europe. We have listeners, because of the internet and because of our technology, who listen to our show live in all 24 time zones and in both hemispheres. That's such a wonderful feeling. It's such an incredibly communal feeling. And of course, you can get our show in reruns if you go to our website. But the most important thing is that there are people listening to us right now who are down in the Southern Hemisphere who have no idea what Mummy is talking about. With it being 16 inches of snow outside my studio right now, it's completely, we're in our 36th hour of snow, and it's absolutely cinematic. It's gorgeous. Gwendolyn is complaining about the temperature dropping all the way to 52 degrees in Port St. Lucie, Florida, which is so charming. And I know my Floridian audience, I hope Pamela will call in tonight, but I know that you've had to actually dig through some sort of box in an attic or a garage or a lean-to and find a cardigan sweater. I, on the other hand, have been shoveling snow at my age, 125, for those of you that keep track, and I have shoveled snow now four times by myself. I've shoveled the front drive and the front walk and the front porch, and it looks like I haven't shoveled anything. The only way I know that I've shoveled is if I look at my next door neighbor, a charming lady who hasn't shoveled at all, and her little Hyundai is buried under 6 feet of snow. So I guess she's, yes, worse off than I am. But my front driveway right now looks absolutely like a Christmas card. And what's especially distressing, I just told Gwendolyn this, was that I opened the front door of our charming little townhouse, and the snow is so thick and falling so heavily that it has actually drifted up into the screen door outside. You know that feeling, for those of you that have experienced winter climates, where you open the inner door and you look and you go, oh, shit, the snow has billowed up to the screen door, and in order, you have to push the screen door open and sort of shovel the snow away to go out and, and it's like, oh my God, my God. On the other hand, it is absolutely breathtaking. And Gwendolyn remembers from her days up here in the North and in Western New York and everything, what it's like to have snow. Is there anything more beautiful than snow swirling at night near a street lamp, wonderful vintage. Oh my God, it's absolutely
pretty.
Beautiful. It's like MGM and Bing Crosby are due here any minute. So Gwendolyn, here we are, here at Be Monsters Network. We're here with Come Now, Don't Sulk. We're all tucked in. I've got the fireplace going, and I can't think of anything that I would rather do or add to my hot chocolate with the a shot of whiskey in it than to talk to you about a fragrance we need. Why don't we figure out a fragrance, because we're now in the midwinter why bothers. That's what Mummy calls them, the midwinter why bothers. The holidays are behind us. Valentine's Day is a fart, as far as I'm concerned. So what do you think a fragrance would be good for our wonderful listeners tonight to go to the daughtersofisis.com? Yes.
Our Celt and European ancestors would look on these few days at the beginning of February as the days when you would be, doing your spring cleaning, getting ready for spring to come.
Yes,
I agree
with you completely.
And we did that this weekend. The house beautiful. But I would suggest this one because I think there's going to be some more snow down the road and some more going within time. so I'm going to suggest a good old favorite, Hecate's Cavern. Facing and embracing the fierce darkness within. It's a wonderful blending. It really is. It's violet leaf with some really, really old patchouli and black currant and cedar wood and wormwood. And it's a real deep down sort of a scent, but it brings you to a place inside where you go, oh, it's like a little aha moment. And it's protective and warm. Warm being the key word, warm.
Sounds great. So they can find that on daughtersofisis.com.
They can. On my Mr. and Mists and Sprays. And just scroll down till you see Hecate's Cavern. And they can find it there. And
fabulous. It sounds absolutely perfect. Now, I want you to talk, first of all, I didn't do my homework. I want to remind everyone that you can call in tonight, and I really encourage you to. Our phone number here at the switchboard, even though Mummy is just outside of Philadelphia on the main line and Gwendolyn is down in Port St. Lucie, we have a central switchboard, and all our girls are waiting. And the phone number is 323-784-9639. That's 323. 784-9639. Call in and let's discuss what you do about the midwinter why bothers. That time where it's like we don't know, we've got weeks and weeks ahead of us, even if Punxsutawney Phil, who by the way lives only a few miles from me, finds his shadow tomorrow. It's been Groundhog Day. There's no chance, by the way, just so you know, there's no chance that Punxsutawney Phil will see his shadow tomorrow. So that means that spring will be early this year, not late. And that's a relief to all of us. Please call in and let's chat about what we do to stay, busy in this weather, especially for the people up in the north. You know, it's funny because where Gwendolyn lives, even with 52 degree weather, Florida is experiencing, as are all the tropics, the high season, their high season right now. So that's when all the northerners that can afford to do so go down to the warmer weather along the Sun Belt or to Hawaii or to Arizona or to Florida, Key West. They're all experiencing their high season. We up here in the north, Fire Island, Cape Cod, Rehoboth Beach, Provincetown, we're all experiencing the shutdown season. Everything is boarded up and closed, and COVID has made it even worse than normal because businesses that would be open, cafes that might still be open over the winter in Provincetown, have taken such a hit that many of them are closed down, completely. So we're all experiencing a different kind of stuff right now. But for those of us that are a little bit angsty, with COVID and can't commune with our friends and neighbors easily, let's discuss tonight ways that we are able to. I have written whole blogs, other seasons, about this time of the year, the post New Year's lull that comes in. And I've suggested that people get together and join quilting bees or needlepoint clubs or cooking classes or anything that gets you out of the house and with friends. Well, now I can't even post those blogs, those wonderful articles anymore, because everything I'm suggesting to dispel winter blues involves being with friends. I've suggested cleaning houses, like doing spring cleaning early. Why not invite friends over and work on the garage or work on the basement or work in the attic? Or why not have a painting party and have people come to different people's houses and you all paint the spare bedroom or something to give, you know, the house a little lift? We can't do that now. Not really. I mean, face masks, yes, but it's not really appropriate. So what do we do via Zoom? Zoom has become like our new family member. What can we do along those lines? I have actually proposed that perhaps we start cooking on Zoom. Wouldn't it be funny to have Pamela and Sybil and a couple of other people actually cooking simultaneously in their kitchens as Zoom calls? It could be very, very cute. And we could have Gwendolyn come in and she could be making fragrances, because she, God knows she can't heat up beef stew in a pan, but she is a genius with essential oils. I've heard that she burns water, but she is a genius with essential oils. So it would be marvelous for me to be making my turkey meatballs and for Gwendolyn to be on the Zoom call making a new fragrance, you know, with ylang ylang and lavender and all sorts of things. But let's if you call in and let us know what you're doing that is dispelling some of these midwinter blues. And I want to ask Gwendolyn, who is our astrologer, you know, our resident astrologer as well. She is so extraordinary about astronomy and astrology. Gwendolyn, what is the significance of the holiday Candlemas, which is technically tomorrow, I believe, February 2nd, is Candlemas. So can you explain what Candlemas is to us?
Well, it's basically, it comes out of the Catholic faith with a celebration of St. Bridget, or Brede, who was the Irish patron saint of poetry and all things creative indoors at this time. But she was also the one who would, she's the preserving saint of all new springs and water resources around you and your community too. And she brings cleaning and cleanliness and good health and the expectancy of spring, which is really, there are green shoots coming up in certain places in the world right now where we're experiencing winter. There's snowdrops coming up and that kind of thing. And
it is interesting, though, that it's this early, that February 2nd, yeah. It's not like near the spring, the spring equinox. It's not there. It's this early. So it's an interesting thing to have done. It's not like mid-February or later February. It's this early. It's kind of strange and nice. We still have candles in all our windows. We still have candles in our windows.
True. But to the ancients, it was the beginning of spring, really. And especially the Catholics took it over and made it St. Bridget's Day. And so Brede is the patron, the, you might say, Mother Abbess over it all. And indeed, you know, in Catholic history, if you look it up, there were many who were, they were like monks, the sisters who followed St. Bridget. And they weren't like your regular nuns. They were more of a bard, teachers. Uh-huh. And that's where we get all our good teachers and that way forward in Catholic parochial schools and such. So there's that. But it's called Imbolc by the ancients.
Uh-huh.
And it's the lambing season. It's the stirrings of new life and the quickening of the year.
I love all of that, and that's wonderful. Again, it is a bit of a stretch of the imagination under 16 inches of snow right now. Mummy, when she's done with her podcast, will go back out into the night and shovel her freight drive again with its additional, its new 5 or 6 inches of snow, which have been added just since I last shoveled. So, but I'm going to hold on to your good wishes and your wonderful. Wonderful news about what Candlemas and the stirring of life underneath all this snow. I actually was so concerned I dragged my potted plants from outside on the deck into the garage to protect
good
them.
Idea.
It's just, I mean, what I am seeing outside my window right now is absolutely hysterical. You can barely see across the street. To the houses across the street and their lights because the snow is falling so thickly. I've been asked many times, Sybil, how long should we leave our Christmas decorations up? And of course, with the COVID catastrophe and with the election and with the riots and all of that negativity, which, by the way, Gwendolyn and I, many weeks we get on a tear about politics, and we certainly could tonight because apparently only 5 Republicans have signed on to the impeachment process, which is I hate to say I told you so, but I was hoping for the best. Like Benjamin Franklin, I hope for the best and prepare for the worst. That way I'm never disappointed is what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but he always said that he always prepared for the worst and he hoped for the best, but he did it that way. And I had hoped for the best on this. I had hoped that Liz Cheney and, the others, whoever, Sass or whatever his name, I had hoped that someone was going to, lead the charge and that the Republicans were going to find a conscience. Sadly, they are all Bitch McConnell. They are all flimsy graham cracker. They are all Tom Cornhole. They are all of them. They're, Rand Appalling. They're all Snooze and Collins. And so it's like they're not going to do anything about this. And it's interesting. I don't know I don't know how they look the family of the policeman who was killed during the riots in the face. I don't know how they look them in the face.
Well, they don't
and
care,
I hope
honey. They don't care.
Yeah.
They simply don't
yeah.
give a shit. That's not
yeah.
their territory. Their territory is to fill their pockets and make sure the corporations are running smoothly.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The Wall Street scandals with GamePro or whatever it's called this week just highlight the mendacity that we live with.
It's
so
true.
And my greatest fear, in addition to the fact that Donald Trump will get away with this and all of the rioters will get away with it or get away with slaps on the wrists or whatever, Moo Cow Man and all of those people that were on the videos doing this appalling stuff, they will get away with it. My big fear is that there will be a financial catastrophe. And we've talked about this with Wayne and Ron on your show, Gwendolyn, that there will be a financial catastrophe during Joe Biden's watch. And that'll be yet something else that the red states can blame on the Democrats. Well, you see, you elected a Democrat and the stock market crashed like in 29. So whatever.
What gets me is we listen to, nice, grandfatherly Mr. Biden get on his high horse a few times and say, well, I can, get angry with Donald Trump and claim to the crowd, well, I'm going to take him out back and show him who's who, It's just like school
yeah.
days, when we go out, I'll beat the hell out of him. Yeah, why don't you get in front of that bully pulpit and do exactly what he did to drive people? And
yes.
it does drive opinion if he gets up there and he starts screaming about McConnell and what they're doing to the country and the people.
I couldn't agree with you more. And he should take a lesson from Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah.
He should take a lesson from Franklin Roosevelt. He should do a fireside chat, and he should weekly, he should sit down and do a short one, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and he should do a fireside chat on radio or television, and he should mail every senator and congressman locally. He should do it nationally, but he should identify Senator Butt Polk from Nose Pick, North Dakota, voted against the COVID relief bill, the $2,000 check that would have gone to help you people in North Dakota. Your senator voted against this, but he voted wholeheartedly for the $1 trillion giveaway to the rich
and 2 years ago.
And he should embarrass them every week. He should have a list of, you know, I'm with you.
We do have a caller.
Oh, great. Great. Let's take it. Hello, caller.
Hi, how are you?
Pamela?
Yes.
It is Pamela. How are you, Pamela?
I am well. How are you?
Now, I assume that you being in Florida, another part of Florida than Gwendolyn, you're chilly as well. Did you pull out a sweater and it's, oh, so chilly, and it's 58 degrees where you are or whatever?
It's 48 where I am at.
Oh, God.
48? Wow.
Yes.
Do you know that if it was 48 degrees here, my driveway would be completely free of snow within about 2 hours?
I remember snow. I remember shoveling and getting out there with the snowblower.
I wish we had a snowblower. We don't have a snowblower. We just have mummy and an aluminum shovel. Oh, my God. Pamela, we haven't heard from you in a couple of weeks, but first of all, before we do anything, I want to thank you in italics and bold print for the wonderful, wonderful, fabulous food Fridays you're doing on the Sybil Brunch and Lollipop Guild page on Facebook. And I want to invite everyone who's listening right now, if you haven't joined that page, it's free and it's fun. The two F's, free and fun. Sybil Brunchen Lollipop Guild page on Facebook. Click on it, find it in the search window, and then join it. We do themes there. We do all sorts of different things. It's non-denominational. It's apolitical. There's no political posts. And our wonderful listener who's on right now with us, Pamela, is in charge. She's the headmistress in charge of our fabulous Food Fridays for friends and family, and she is in charge of that, and she posts recipes and photos, and everybody does now. It's really catching on. Pamela, thank you so much.
It's fun. It's fun, and that's like food is a universal language, and that's how you can connect with people.
Absolutely.
When you can't see them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with you completely.
So absolutely, but
Pamela,
February is here, and we're going to be focusing on some decadent desserts and sweets for February.
Great, and we do want to do a warning to our diabetic friends. Please unjoin the page and do not come back until March 1st, okay? You're done. Get out of here, okay? I'm not going to have lawsuits or anything. Thank goodness Mary Tyler Moore, although I loved her, is dead and gone. She was a diabetic. I mean, there are many celebrities who are diabetics, and I would hate to think that one of our great celebrities had died because she tuned in to our Food Fridays. Now, you did your cookies series for the holidays, which was genius. So I can't even imagine how you're going to up the ante on desserts. How are you going to do that? Those cookies were incredible. They were just incredible. I look like Jabba the Hutt now. Now, what are you going to do? Hot fudge flambé? And what could you possibly be doing? Is it going to be like cakes and puddings and?
Well, I think that, you know, we're going to switch it up, you know, and have, you know, pies 1 week and cakes one week and maybe a pastry 1 week or a Danish or a coffee cake or something of that nature. So just to switch it up a little bit.
That'll be great. I have to tell you, there's nothing more delicious to me than pie crust. And whether it's a savory pie, like in a chicken pot pie, or a fruit pie, a dessert pie, pies to me are definitely a sign that there is a God. There is a supreme being in the world, because pies to me are just, when they're brilliant, they're beyond brilliant. So I look
now,
forward
do you
to
prefer,
this pie.
What is your favorite? Is it a cream pie or a fruit pie?
Well, my favorite is a fruit pie, and I've got to tell you, I love all pies, and I like all the configurations of pies. So I like, what are the names? What are the desserts that are made with fruit and a pie crust, but they're not necessarily a pie with the pie crust over the top? I mean, lattice pies are lovely. All of the artwork that goes into them. But what are the, not trifles, but...
Tart.
What is it? Crostinis or crostatas are one. That's an Italian pie, right?
Well, there's tarts. There's fruit tarts, you know?
Tarts, yes. But I'm even talking about the rustic ones where you roll out dough. It's a dough that will puff up.
And you just kind of fold up the sides.
You fold up the sides. Yeah. It's on the tip of my tongue, that word. But the crostatas, those different kinds of more earthy, you know, rural pie crust and fruit combinations. To me, one of the most delicious things that I ever had in my life was at the Cafe Shasha on Hudson Street in Greenwich Village, right on the corner of Christopher Street. It was just off the corner. It was about two doors up. The Cafe Shasha served a gooseberry tart that was
a galette.
Yes.
Sorry.
And it was, yes, that is it. That, thank you. That's exactly what it was. Yes. And it was gooseberries. And it was absolutely beyond genius. They were green. They were the yellow-green gooseberries. And it was the perfect combination of sweetness and tart. It even out trumped a cherry pie with the tart sweetness, that wonderful sweetness. It was better than apricot pie. It was those gooseberries. And it's hard to find gooseberries. It's really hard to find, you know, gooseberries and a gooseberry dessert and even gooseberry preserves. That was genius. And yes, it's a galette. There's and then the crostatas and all of those are just wonderful, wonderful. So I hope that you'll include some of those in your exploration of pies.
Yes, I do have actually one of my favorites is a galette, but it's with elderberry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love elderberries.
Oh, yeah.
I drink a shot of elderberry extract every night. Elderberry is enchanting. Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's just wonderful.
It is the fairy tree. It's the official fairy tree. You know that, right?
I didn't know that.
It is.
No.
The fairy tree.
It's a fairy tree.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So that means that we now have discovered why people are gay, because they've eaten elderberries at a young age. And no wonder the two sisters in Arsenic and Old Lace were feeding all their gentlemen callers. They were feeding them elderberry wine and finishing them off with that. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
Just hysterical. I'm looking through my recipe books right now. I'm trying to find my book on rural desserts. I have a recipe book that is literally about pies and cakes and everything. I'll have to find it for the next show and pull it out and just see what they have to say. I got a cookbook the other day that was like 150 chicken soup recipes. And it's chicken soups from all around the world and what all these different nations and ethnic groups do with chicken soup, because chicken soup is, talk about food being a universal language, chicken soup is definitely one of the universals in the world. And so I've been looking at that. That was such a wonderful cookbook to get, and I was enjoying just reading it. So what are you working on right now, Pamela? Are you baking? I know that you work during the day, but when you get home, is there anything that's grabbed your attention lately? Are you making any dinners that are kind of oomphy or?
Not really. I mean, right now, I did, everything was in, tonight I did chicken and potatoes. That was all in one big cast iron skillet. You start on the stove and just throw in the oven.
I love that.
I'm big on during the week where, you know, one pan, kind of like a one pan plan kind of thing where
I am with
pan,
you.
Yep. Or a sheet pan. I love sheet pan dinners. put everything on the sheet pan and throw it in the oven. And
yes.
So yeah. Tonight we did chicken thighs that we browned on both sides. And then I threw in some baby yellow potatoes that I have.
Oh,
and,
delicious.
Some thyme and garlic and salt and pepper, and threw it in the oven and went about my business until it was done.
I've got to tell you, to me, chicken thighs are, I don't know what the obsession is with chicken breasts. To me, the only way to use chicken breasts is really to hammer them flat, bread them, and then make it a, you know, do it that way. Bread them and make it like a...
you can do a potato
chicken
parmesan or
yeah. Yes, exactly. Chicken parmigiana is wonderful. If you're watching your weight, you can do it with the tomato sauce and all of that on a bed of arugula and skip the cheese. But chicken breasts to me are, you really have to work on them to make them wonderful. Chicken thighs, on the other hand, are just paradise. And I'm hoping that we're not offending our vegetarian vegan friends right now that are listening, but chicken thighs
they're more
so
flavor
flavorful.
In them. They don't dry out as bad as a chicken breast does. And these were, you know, boneless, skinless chicken thighs that I used. So
really?
Yeah.
Because if you do them on the bone and with the skin, it's, I mean, talk about they're even beyond flavorful.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but they're so forgiving as a cut of meat that boneless and skinless, they are still paradise to me. They're just amazing.
And cheap.
And, with,
and cheap.
And cheap. It's so amazing. They're an incredible food source, you know, and they allow you to do so many ingenious things with them. I was sauteing, I've gone into a real pepper, sweet pepper time in my life right now. I love sauteing and using, dicing up or slicing or whatever, yellow, red, and orange peppers. I simply adore them. And I love mincing them all up like confetti and then putting them in soups or in, anything, a stew. I just love them. And I've gotten also into pastina, the little... I love putting pastina. I love pasta, period. And I love the fact that the Italians invented 500 different pasta shapes and what they all achieve. You know, they are interesting. But pastina
they are,
is.
But you can only have certain things with certain kinds of pasta.
I agree. That's
even though it's all the
thing.
Same, it's the way it's cut
even
in the Italians.
You are so smart.
Do certain things.
Well, I always joke that the French consider themselves to be the foodies of Europe, and they are. But it's only if you want, like, you know, nuclear fission. It's only their food is so much about science and about elaborate experiments in astrophysics. The French have taken food into something over their hundreds of years of cooking. It's just so elaborate, and even their simplest food is still elaborate. And they apply design to everything: their clothes, their furniture, their food, their design sense. As the French are so elaborate, they've got like 20 different words for the word that we say chair. The French, leave it to the French to have labeled each chair a different word. I mean, who would come up with panniers for Marie Antoinette? She's walking around with an office building attached to her. Only the French could come up with taking clothes and doing something that elaborate. The Italians, though, their cuisine, even at its most complex, is simple. It's about fresh ingredients and simplicity. Nothing they do is very, very complex. It's so simple, except for pasta. They had to apply design to something, and they took wheat, they took flour and water and an egg. They rolled it out, and then they proceeded to apply science to it, and Pamela is absolutely right. The I said 500. There's probably 5,000 different shapes of pasta, and they do affect the taste of the food, what the food does that goes with them. It's very elaborate. And Pamela's right. You can't eat certain things with certain pastas. Certain pastas go with certain sauces and food, and that's it, done, period. It just isn't, you can't break out of it. And it's wonderful. It's incredible, incredible. And I've gotten into this pastina jag, which is, of course, the little tiny, the pasta is literally the size of, like, the period of a sentence, and you pour it into soups, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. What's your favorite pastas? Pamela, what are your favorite three pasta shapes that you love working with?
I do like angel hair is my – I do like that. I do like arcachete.
Oh, wait, and tell us what you like, what sauce, what do you do with angel hair? Tell us the things that
angel hair,
make it so
angel hair I'll use with that's kind of like instead of spaghetti, I'll use angel hair. And
so
I'll
you would
do
it with clams and a white sauce, for instance.
I could do it with clams and a white sauce. I would do it with pasta alle olio with garlic and olive oil and just some pecorino romano and
nice.
And maybe I'll throw some broccoli in there if I'm feeling adventurous, if I'm just want a quick meal. And I like orchicetni. They look like little ears.
That's what it means. Yes, like, orchetti, right. It's
yeah.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. So and I'll use that and I like that because it holds the sauce. You know,
uh-huh.
And it you know holds the sauce and the flavor with that. Now I'll do that, and then I like baked rigatoni. I prefer it baked over
I
just
that.
Boiling and putting sauce on it. But
and what kind of sauce? Like a meat sauce? Do you do a bolognese with that,
yes,
or what?
Like a bolognese. Yeah, like we did.
I did a
bolognese the other day.
Yeah.
And just a simple bolognese with just a can of whole tomatoes that you throw in the food processor with some fresh garlic and some basil, just a pinch of sugar to take out the acidity, and then you mix it with the meat, and it's just, you know, so flavorful.
I would like to recommend, if I may, to our home audience, and I'm interested to hear what you and Gwendolyn think. I have become, over the years of my cooking, I have become a San Marzano tomato addict. So I love tomatoes, but the San Marzanos, strictly San Marzanos. So, and by the way, the prejudice about fresh tomatoes as opposed to canned tomatoes, the thing that we have to remember is that even the Italians use canned tomatoes all the time. If you tune in mm-hmm. to Lydia, or you tune into any of the Food Network or Cooking Channel or PBS shows, you will see that Italians are constantly using their own canned tomatoes. And overwhelmingly, Italians themselves will use only San Marzano tomatoes. It's because of the soil mm-hmm. that they're grown in and the nature of the whole process that San Marzano's. So for those of you at home that consider yourself good cooks, try and experiment with something. If you ever want to try and make your own tomato sauce, or if you do it all the time but you haven't used San Marzano's, I would recommend that you do it. Cento makes great San Marzano tomatoes. Look for it on the label, though. Make sure you see it. And by the way, real aficionados, real snobs about cooking say that Red Pack, isn't it Red Pack? Yeah, it's the Red Pack tomatoes are even better. Their San Marzanos are even more extraordinary. I'm looking it up right now. Red Pack is apparently an even more complex yes, it's Red Pack, and they're San Marzanos, and you should try them as well. But make sure to always see San Marzano on the label. If you can't find Red Pack, and that's kind of a local thing in certain regions of the country, go to make sure you look for Cento, because they are fabulous. Do you use San Marzanos, Pamela?
I do. I use Contadina San Marzano.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting. I've never seen theirs even. I've never seen them do San Marzano's. I'll have to look for it. Thank you for giving me a heads up on that. The tomato paste I use is, oh God, what's the brand name? It comes in a black tube, and it's the, it's right on the tip of my tongue. I'm not near the kitchen. It's tomato sauce in a toothpaste tube. And it's, to me, it's wonderful that they've come up with that, because in the old days we used to use Contadina, and the problem with Contadina was that you opened the can and then you were stuck with it. It was like you had to use it up, and you wouldn't necessarily use an entire can of tomato paste on a recipe, or would you?
Is it a more?
Would you, Pamela?
No, I wouldn't. Is it a more, the tomato paste you're talking about?
Yes, Amore, yes. It's Amore. Yes, that's the one. And that stays fresh. You can use as much as you want, and you squeeze the bottom of the tube the way you would with toothpaste, and you
right.
keep it in your refrigerator. And that tomato paste is absolutely wonderful, and it stays fresh. The heartbreak for me was that with tomato paste in a can, what were you going to do with – half a can of tomato paste? There was no way.
Right, because
really
you only need. I mean, and the thing with tomato paste, it's just a concentrated, just to give you more of that tomato flavor. So you don't
yes.
need a lot of it. That's why the cans are so small. But
exactly.
To use a, unless you're making a vat of sauce, you wouldn't use a.
Yeah, or that you're in an Italian neighborhood down on Rivington Street in Little Italy in New York. I mean, so you open the can and then you lean out your window on the alleyway and you pass it to the Spinellis across the way, Roseanne Spinelli's
exactly.
across the way. And look, Roseanne, I just used a third of a can. Can you pass this on to you? Are you making spaghetti here? Use the rest of this. I mean, because you wouldn't want it to go to waste. Yeah. So it's just, folks, thank you. Pamela, you're always a lifesaver. Thank you so much. Amore. It's the Amore, and it is that tomato paste. Folks at home, try that. Put it. Put a big dollop, a big tablespoon or two in the corner of your pan on the hot spot with some olive oil, and caramelize that and get that going, and you will be absolutely transported to, pasta land. It's wonderful, wonderful. Hey, Gwendolyn, do you cook? Do you cook a lot?
I do. I don't do it a lot. I used to. But I like making up dishes. Like I made up with chicken breasts, I made up this tangerine chicken with lots of butter and garlic and tangerine.
Wonderful.
But on tomatoes, do you know what I'm in love with? I'm in love with good heirloom tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
Fresh and in the salad. They're just so wonderful. They taste so good. But I just picked up a few tips about tomato paste and tomatoes to use in my spaghetti sauce. I do my mother's spaghetti sauce. And it cooks for 2 days, of course. And I was raised by a woman with a lot of Irish in her, and we put some sugar into the spaghetti sauce to cut the acid. And
yeah, that's what I
do. You do. Now, you
get different theories on that, though, too, because you'll talk to Italians. We have Italian friends who say, oh, my God, I never put sugar in. If you can't sweeten that sauce without caramelizing the tomatoes and the tomato sauce
right.
and the tomato paste and caramelizing the onions and caramelizing the garlic. So a lot of Italians will stick very strictly to, sauteing the vegetables to the point where the sugars are created by the heat. So that the sugar is created through sauteing the meat. So that's why cooking, those first cavemen who were exposed to an animal that had been struck by lightning, and the vegetables around the tree, the carrots that they had just discovered had been roasted in the ground. That fire creates sugars in the food. And that's why we have become, as a species, addicted to the sweetness that is hidden in cooked food. And it's wonderful, but I'm with you. I have a jar of, raw sugar up in my cabinet. And if my sauce is a little bit on the tart side, too tart, I will put like just a splash of sugar, a pinch or even up to a teaspoon just to take the edge off. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a secret ingredient, and I know that probably there are Italians in the audience tonight hating our guts because we're doing that.
There's
I have
also,
a question
I mean,
for both
if,
of you.
If you're not looking for that sweet, you can also use a pinch of soda.
Baking soda.
Yeah, because the acid.
Yes, you can.
That's actually what the sugar does, too. The sugar cuts the acid.
So your stomach doesn't go kaboom.
One thing that drives me nuts on the cooking shows, and it's so interesting, and it's the inconsistency between one and another. And I binge watch them. I mean, I watch everything from Ina Garten to Lydia to all of them. Nick Stellinos with his garlic. He's always, you know, the garlic. I watch Julia Child. I watch all of them, all of them. One thing that always strikes me, and they're very inconsistent, they all are very much about warning against burning garlic. However, let me finish here. However, because they all talk about it, and of course, it's irreversible. So you can fix a lot of things in cooking, but you cannot fix burned garlic. If garlic goes bitter, it's out in the garbage. There's no way to doctor it or steer the all the sugar in the world, all the baking soda. There's nothing you can do. So, but what scares me for newcomers to cooking is that you'll see someone dice up or even mince garlic and throw it into a pan with olive oil and go. And Lydia is one of them. Lydia is a genius, but she will do stuff like that. And she will say, and we put the garlic in, and we are going to brown the garlic. It's like, Lydia, you're doing a PBS show. You're doing a show where you have all these people who've never cooked or are beginner cooks or whatever, and you've got to explain what you eat. And she'll say, and we're going to let that go for 2 minutes. I've seen Lydia brown garlic, brown it. And I'm thinking to myself, How is she going to explain that? Why is that not burning? Why is that not bitter? What I have seen, though, and I've learned this very young, was I saw someone, quote unquote, cushion their garlic. And they used that expression, and I loved it. They said, never put garlic into a pan until you have put onions in or peppers. You've got to put in something else, which is going to already be releasing water, is already going to be stewing in that, is sautéing in that olive oil or whatever you're doing. And then you put in the garlic for the last minute or two until you add all the crushed tomatoes. Once you add crushed tomatoes or once you add clam juices and things, once you've added all that other stuff, you can have the garlic in there for a minute or two, but you cannot put garlic into a roasting hot pan with some olive oil and leave it there and then you go back to the counter and you're making your pasta and you're cleaning the chicken and it's like, oh dear God, no. And it's so funny. I see this inconsistency all the time. People are always doing this. And then once in a while you'll see someone say, and by the way, you make sure that you've got the onions in there first, and then you put the garlic. Put the mushrooms in first, and then you put the garlic. You've got to cushion your. Now, I'm ready to be talked out of this by you two. Do you two, when you're cooking, ever put minced garlic or diced garlic in a hot pan alone with nothing else? Would you ever do that?
No.
I have, yes. I do when I'm making my pasta with olive oil and garlic. So I will put in the garlic with the olive oil, and then I will take it out and then put the olive oil back in, then the garlic back in. But I don't leave it in there. I mean, I put it in.
Okay, that's interesting.
So
what
the
you're
oil.
Doing, yeah. Yeah, what you're doing is you're flavoring the oil with the garlic, and right when the garlic would be a problem, you take it out of there and get rid of it, right? You do something. You don't let it sit in there.
Right, I take it out, and then I'll toss the angel hair with it, and then I'll put the garlic in back in at the end after off the heat.
At the end. Okay, so home audience, there you go. Unfortunately, we're not on the screen yet. We're not doing this on a video yet. But there you have it. There you have someone who's a wonderful cook, you know, we have all acknowledged that Pamela's a wonderful cook. She and I have done that too. I put the garlic in the oil, stirred it around for a minute, flavored the oil, and then I get the garlic out of there, whether I use it again or not. But that's the way to do it. Yes.
Okay. So my mom used to have what she called her favorite hangover food, which was elbow macaroni, and the smallest elbow macaroni. And she'd make the macaroni, put it aside, and then put like, I don't know how much, but quite a bit of olive oil in the pan. And first, and she said, never put your garlic in first. And she'd put the yellow onions in.
Yeah.
And let them cook. And then she put, at the very last, really minced garlic. She had one of those presses.
So she would cushion her garlic. She was cushioning her garlic, right.
And then she'd dump the macaroni in you know, mix it all up and salt and pepper. And, you know, it's still good today. It's one of my favorite comfort foods.
Yes. One thing I would just want to say, because I'm so glad that Pamela did clarify that, is that you can flavor your oil with the garlic, but take it out. There's another thing that people who are beginning cooks that may not have learned, and I've learned this over the years, is that the way you deal with vegetables, specifically garlic, if you mince garlic, it is a totally different flavor than if you throw garlic, for instance, sliced, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you mince it completely through a garlic press, it is a very different flavor than it is if you do slices of garlic in a dish. The garlic is much sweeter and much more subtle the more whole you leave it, and much more it's sharper. It's got a real edge to it the finer you mince it and put it into a dish. So that is one thing and that's true of everything. You know, onions sliced you know, it's very different than onions minced, you know, chopped or minced or whatever. The finer you do a vegetable, the vegetable changes its flavor completely when you apply heat to it. It's very much like Pamela Jett's wonderful theory of pastas. Pastas taste different according to their shape and how they hold the sauce and how they react with the rest of the food. It's like that with vegetables. Vegetables, depending on what you do with the structure of a vegetable, from garlic to carrots to celery, the flavor is completely different once you apply heat. If you've sliced it or minced it or julienned it or wedged it or whatever, it's very interesting how that works. So I really want people to explore food, you know, in this month. You know, you're stuck inside, and now you can't even cook with friends unless you're Zoom calling. So explore. Get some chicken stock. And if you're like, Mommy, I have roast chickens, and I save the carcasses. I wrap them all up in plastic, and I put them in the freezer. And then once a week, I throw 3 or 4 of them into my giant all-clad Dutch oven stock pot. And I make my own stock from scratch. And I'm one of those girls that I don't do one chicken carcass for a stock pot. I don't do 2. I do 3 and even 4. I will get them down in there and submerge them in water. And I will make chicken stock that is like, it's nearly brown. It's so concentrated that it is nearly brown. And by the way, I do my chicken stock for 24 hours. My chicken stock is on the stove simmering for like a good 24 hours. I did one the other day because I couldn't get to it. I did it for 30 hours and it was, we're eating it right now. It's wonderful. It's the best base for anything. You use it
for lots
everything.
Of things. When it says, you know, add, you know, water, you add a little chicken stock instead.
Yes, Pamela. Yes, absolutely. I never put water in anything. I deglaze a pan with chicken stock. I sauteed vegetables, peppers and onions tonight, and sausages and sausage slices. And I, when it was getting really thick, instead of, you know, putting water in there to deglaze the pan, I put a dollop from the chicken soup that I was making on another burner. I put a dollop of it in the pan to deglaze it and to get it steaming even more. Chicken stock is water. It is the universal solvent in my kitchen. It's wonderful to use chicken stock from scratch. And if you can't do that, then buy the unsalted chicken stocks that they have out on the market. I have both. I have cartons of chicken stock in my refrigerator because sometimes my chicken stock will be so dense that I will thin it with a little bit of store-bought chicken stock. But I love – and by the way, chicken stock, you know, there's Jewish food – chicken stock is like supposedly this. There's a superstition about it being a universal penicillin. Believe it. Chicken stock, chicken soup is magical. It is wondrous. There's something spooky in it, no matter what you do with it. There's something wonderful about it, whether you put potatoes into it or noodles or rice or tahina. It's spooky. It's spooky, and it is the universal thing. You can do anything with chicken stock. You can put any vegetables into it, in any permutations, any combinations. So, I just want you both to know that I put on 8 pounds during this conversation. It's very encouraging. I'm very sad, and I really like talking about food. It's a bit like talking about sex, isn't it? But I wish I'd put the 8 pounds on by eating a chocolate cake. But still, no, it's lovely. Pamela, what if somebody called you up from our home audience and said, I'm interested in – because people do this with Lydia all the time. I just started cooking, and I'm in college, blah, blah, blah. What would you suggest to them would be a great way to start cooking? What would be the first thing that you would say someone should attempt to make? You know, of all the foods, what would it be?
I think the easiest thing to start – I would start simple with soups.
I agree.
Soups are simple to do. You can, you know, many variations of what you like. And customize it for you, and it's all in one pot.
I agree.
So there, you know, you know, can doctor it up. You can, you know, add a little more of this. It's just that's the best way to gauge your flavor profiles of what you like and what you want to do. I mean, you know, then you'll have a better palate and start to get into more sophisticated dishes. But you have to get that flavor palate first.
Yeah, I agree.
Of cooks and a lot of just homey, you know, and there's a plethora of them. There's just way too many, but there's a few real good ones that do Facebook. I don't know if you guys have watched any of those, but some of them are just fabulous.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The thing about soups too, I have to say, is they're very forgiving. You know, you're dealing with something that you can adjust over and over and over and over again. I mean, the only thing you can't do is you can't have burned the garlic and have it in there and then keep hoping that you're adding enough potatoes or sweet potatoes or chocolate frosting from Betty Crocker. I mean, once you've done that, that pot of soup is dead and must be destroyed. But short of burning garlic in it, or burning any vegetable. You can't really burn something and have it be in there. But soups can be adjusted left and right and left and right. Start out by going out and getting a couple of cartons of chicken stock and then buy vegetables that you think would be fun to have. And Pamela said it's a one-pot thing. If you want to keep the stock in a soup pot, right, or in a slow cooker or whatever – and not a pressure cooker, a slow cooker, and then you saute some vegetables that you think would be interesting, you can experiment that way. You could saute some onions and get the onions sort of toasty or, you know, golden and everything, and then put them in and see what that tastes like, chicken stock with onions. Then you could try some garlic. You could chop up carrots and celery, and you can experiment with how much pre-cooking. What?
We are down to 90 seconds. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh, we are. Look at that.
Wow.
Well, thank God. Well, I won't put on any more weight tonight. Pamela, I'm so thrilled you called in. Thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome.
That was fun.
And by the way, everybody, please stay tuned. the Civil Brunch and Lollipop Guild page. Pamela is going to start her dessert series this Friday, so that'll be very exciting, our Fabulous Food Fridays with Desserts with Pamela. And we have been coming to you on Come Now, Don't Sulk, brought to you by the daughtersofisis.com. That's all one word, daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, and by listeners like you. Thank you so much. Pamela, I love you. Thank you so much. Gwendolyn,
yes, love you too.
You are our wonderful producer, our muse. You're our own goddess right here on Earth. We worship the goddess, and we have one right in our own laboratory of fragrances. Aww. Right here. Gwendolyn Holden-Berry, we will see you here on Come Now, Don't Sulk, same time, same channel, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. Ladies, thank you so much. Have a wonderful week. Stay warm. Till they're in Florida. go screw yourselves. Mummy's going out right now to shovel another 6 inches of snow. So I couldn't be more uninterested in your woes with your cardigan sweaters. Good night, everybody. I love you.
Good night.
Good night.